Good evening and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. I'm Laura Palmisano. Recently, three Democratic lawmakers hosted a constituent meet-and-greet in Paonia. At the event, Western Slope lawmakers Senator Carrie Donovan and Representative Millie Hamner provided a legislative update. Today on the program, we'll hear interviews from that event. First up, a conversation with Colorado House Democratic leader Crisanta Duran. Last session, one of your priorities was workforce development, and you've mentioned in a recent meeting that it's also going to be one of your priorities. Can you tell me what you're working on in regard to that issue?
We are working to create more partnerships between business, K through 12 education, and higher education. It's very important that we are able to fill the jobs in Colorado that are available and make sure that people have access to skills to be able to get into good paying jobs. And so we're working with a variety of stakeholders to bring forward a 10 bill package this session to better align the needs of business to have access to a qualified workforce and make sure people have the skills to be able to get good paying jobs.
So you said a 10 bill package. What are some of those bills?
There is an effort to incentivize K through 12 schools that offer more on-the-job opportunities through apprenticeships, through internships, through access to AP computer science courses to make sure that students have the tools they need to be able to succeed. We're also looking at providing dollars to teachers to get the training that they need to be able to teach in some of the industries in Colorado that are most in need of more good-paying jobs. We're also focusing on STEM jobs and focusing on computer science and digital literacy in hopes that more students will have access to classes that can teach them these very important subject areas. It's estimated that there's about 16,000 computer science and digital literacy jobs in the state of Colorado that are being unfilled. Most of those jobs start around $90,000 for salary. There's other areas, other industries that we've identified that it's important that students have access to 21st century skills to be able to get into those good paying jobs. We also have an initiative called Rehire Colorado that we're looking to extend. So we've focused on students in K through 12 and higher ed, but we also know that there are Coloradans that have been in the workforce for years that need to get updated skills as well, or need to be retrained to be able to get into good paying jobs. Rehire Colorado is focusing specifically on individuals that are most difficult to employ, a focus on seniors, veterans, and non-custodial parents to have these individuals work with a Colorado employer for a period of time in hopes that they will get a full-time employment after they receive the training with the Colorado company. That Rehire Colorado has been hugely successful. It's employed almost 80% of all of its participants and got people into good-paying jobs.
Another priority you have mentioned this session is affordable housing. What bills are you working on to address that issue?
People should be able to live in the area that they work. And affordable housing is at the forefront of too many Coloradans' minds, regardless of whether you live in a urban area, or a suburban area, or in a rural area of the state. We are trying to pass an initiative so that there will be a tax credit for developers who build or redevelop more affordable housing in Colorado. This initiative was passed a couple of years ago and is set to expire. And during the time that it has been in effect, we've seen over 2,000 affordable housing units built throughout Colorado. We've also seen a lot of economic economic activity and jobs associated with the tax credits. We want to bring that tax credit back and extend it for future years. We also have an initiative that will enable Coloradans to save dollars specifically for closing costs on a home, or save dollars for a down payment on a home if they're a first-time home buyer. It's an incentive that we are hoping will encourage more Coloradans to save dollars for those purposes. And the reason why they would do it if this bill is successfully passed is that all of the dollars that they save for a down payment or for closing costs on a home will be tax-free. So those dollars will be tax-free. It should be able to help a lot of Coloradans who continue to struggle to have the opportunity to buy their first home and be able to have access to the American dream. So we're very excited about that initiative. We're hopeful that it will get through both chambers with bipartisan support.
The session is approaching its midpoint. How do you expect the latter half of the session to go, and what issues might take center stage?
We still need to balance Colorado's budget. We're not like Washington, D.C. and Colorado. We have a requirement that we balance our budget every year, and we want to make sure to invest in education, transportation, rural economic development. We know we have a lot more work to do, that as Colorado's economy has gotten better, that it benefits all and not just those at the very top. And this session, the budget is center stage because there are a lot of different ideas as to how we should spend some of the revenue coming into the state of Colorado. In our state, we have a law called Tabor, and essentially that means even in a time when Colorado's economy has gotten better, there's more revenue coming into Colorado, that we may not be able to use all of those dollars to spend on needed services like education, like transportation, and economic rural development, because there is a requirement that some of those dollars be refunded back to Coloradans. And so we are trying to work through that budget issue and trying to do the most that we have. We're trying to do the most with what we have in terms of making in the needed investments in education, transportation, and economic rural development.
One of the big issues that has been talked about at the Capitol this year is the hospital provider fee and taking that away from the cap of Tabor and moving it into an enterprise fund. There are some legal experts that say it is constitutional and that could happen, but you also have leadership in the Senate who seem to be opposed to it. What is your thought on this, and do you think it actually could happen?
Well, my background is I'm an attorney, and a lot of times you can get a lot of different attorneys with a lot of different opinions. But at the end of the day, it is most important that people who have been elected to serve as representatives and senators step up, and that we lead and we address the needs of Colorado. We have an opportunity to change a hospital provider fee into an enterprise, and that would free up hundreds of millions of dollars that we can invest in education and affordable housing, and we can invest it in economic rural development. We can invest it in transportation and address the needs of the people of Colorado. I believe it is our responsibility to lead and take advantage of the opportunity that we have in front of us with regards to the hospital provider fee proposal to change it into an enterprise, because we know that there are overcrowded classrooms in Colorado. We know that there's a lot of congestion when it comes to traffic, and that our roads and bridges need some additional care. And we know that we want to see a Colorado economy that works for all and not just those at the top. And so we should take advantage of this opportunity that we have to make sure that we're investing in the needed services in Colorado and in issues that the people of our state care about.
Thank you for your time, Crisanta.
Yes, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
That was House Majority Leader Crisanta Duran. You are listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano. Next, we'll hear an interview with Democratic Representative Millie Hamner. The Western Slope lawmaker is the chair of the State Joint Budget Committee this session. Hamner is also the vice chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Millie, there's been a big debate at the Capitol this session over the hospital provider fee. Some want to see it be removed from under the Tabor cap and say that's constitutional. They want it to see it turn into an enterprise fund. But Senate President Bill Cadman doesn't seem convinced that can actually happen. How do you see this issue playing out?
Well, thank you, Laura. That has been a really interesting issue to follow this session. There hasn't been a change in position on this issue to date. But we have received another opinion from legal counsel that says that it's absolutely constitutional. I think what's going to happen here is that as we get to the point of having to balance the budget, we're going to see that it's going to be very difficult to honor what the people of Colorado want to see in that budget without having that additional revenue to work with.
And how much funding is it estimated changing the hospital provider fee could shore up for the budget?
During this budget year, it would be about the same amount of the refunds that we would be issuing to taxpayers. So we would estimate that to be between $200 and $300 million on the table.
Are there options other than the hospital provider fee that could add more money to the budget? It is looking like it's going to be a tight year this year, and most bills with a fiscal note don't seem like they're going to go very far.
Yeah, as far as other options for revenue on the table, one idea that some people have is that we could potentially increase fees or cash-funded resources into the state budget and have programs pay for themselves. But what happens when we're in this Tabor situation, when we've hit the revenue cap, even if we're able to get more cash fees and funds into our budget, we actually have to refund out of the general fund. So it really doesn't help us in the big picture of the budget.
Health insurance rates are high on the Western Slope. You've said in a recent letter to constituents that addressing this issue is a priority. What are you working on to maybe alleviate some of that pressure?
I've been working really closely with a coalition of Western Slope County commissioners. They have chosen Dan Gibbs from Summit County to be their key spokesperson, so I'm working very closely with Dan Gibbs, who's a former senator who lives in Summit County. And just this week, a coalition of some of the Western Slope representatives met with the Division of Insurance and a variety of others to tackle this issue. One of the ideas that we have for legislation is to create one insurance rating system for the entire state of Colorado. I'm not sure that will be the solution, but that was the first idea we put on the table. We are going back to the drawing board, but I anticipate that we will have some legislation that tackles this issue and raises the awareness of the people of Colorado that it is completely unfair for the people of Western Colorado to pay exorbitant health care rates.
There's a bill right now that's in the Senate to try and get more teachers interested in working in rural communities. Do you think that bill will pass the Senate because it has a fiscal note?
I haven't seen that bill yet. I've heard about it, so I don't really know the particulars of it. I think it's a fabulous concept. It's really challenging for rural school districts to attract and retain high-quality teachers. So I need to dig into the details of the bill to see what it's really doing, but I would think that it would have a good chance of passing the Senate.
The fate of a state-run center in Grand Junction that serves the disabled is uncertain. The aging facility needs major upgrades, and there's also talk of closing it. How do you propose handling this center, and what could be done to address it?
Well, thank you so much for bringing up this issue. It's really a challenging situation. The Capital Development Committee has recently sent a letter to the Budget Committee recommending that the facility be closed. Meanwhile, the Budget Committee sent a letter to the Department of Human Services to ask them for specific recommendations about what to do, because they have the expertise and the staffing and people who have been dealing with this issue on an ongoing basis. So this is not a budget decision. This is about people who are looking for services, and we can't just displace them from that facility without having a very clear path of where they're going to go and what we're going to do. So we've given the Department of Human Services a deadline to submit to us a comprehensive implementation plan of what to do with the recommendations from a task force that's been studying this issue. And I expect to know probably in about the third or fourth week of March what that plan is.
What are you working on for the latter half of the session?
Well, I've got my own personal legislation that is in a variety of stages of the process. So I'll be definitely working on those pieces. The biggest challenge for me will be getting the budget to balance and preparing the long bill, and that will be the bulk of what I'll be working on throughout the month of March.
The news has just come out that the Bowie mine here in Delta County is going to idle. It is another mine that's closed in this area in recent years, and hundreds of individuals have lost their jobs. What can be done at the legislative level to maybe help Delta County, which is a community that has seen a major hit from the decline in coal?
You know, this is breaking news, and I think it's just terrible news. I'm very disappointed to hear that. I think the governor needs to react as well and give some direction statewide. As far as the legislature, we can continue efforts that we've put in place in the past through rural economic development grants, the Jumpstart program, job retraining, workforce development. But again, one of the reasons that I'm here in Delta County today is to hear from my constituents. What do they think we should and could be doing?
That was State Representative Millie Hamner. Now we'll hear an interview with Democratic Senator Carrie Donovan. The Rural Economic Assistance Bill cleared its first committee. You sponsored a similar bill last year, but that died in committee. Explain how this bill is different and why you think it might have a better chance of passing.
Yeah, this year's bill, the Rural Emergency Assistance Grant Program, looks at providing emergency grants for communities that have lost jobs or had a significant job loss in their community. And in that way, the bill is very similar to last year's bill. Both bills aim to look at how can we have an emergency response in communities that have lost jobs in order to keep those small rural communities in place. The bill this year has a different funding mechanism, but otherwise it's very similar to last year's bill.
Talking about mass layoffs, the news just came out that the Bowie mine here in Delta County is going to idle. Delta County and the surrounding area has lost hundreds of coal jobs in recent years and has been very impacted by the downturn in coal. How would this bill or maybe other legislation you're working on help Delta County and other communities that are struggling with the decline of this industry?
So this bill was written specifically with Delta County in mind, and I really wish that it had passed last year so it'd be in place right now so that it could be reacting to this latest news of layoffs in the community. What it will do is allow communities to request funds and also support from the state. So kind of a double whammy approach of not only funds that can be very, very broadly used to support the community, but also bringing the resources of the state to the community in terms of the Department of Labor, Office of Economic Development, Department of Local Affairs. The bill requires that with support of the funds also comes support of all these departments coming to the communities instead of the communities when they're small and facing significant events like this, having to find additional resources to reach out to the state. So it's kind of a proactive approach of trying to bring the state to these communities.
And what is your reaction to the news of another mine closing out here?
I mean, Delta County is an incredible part of Colorado, and I think people that live here know that. But it continues to face, struggle year after year of different economic challenges. And I know the community is really invested in finding a pathway forward to what the future of Delta County looks like. And I really hope to be a part of all of those discussions and help out wherever I can.
How do you think the state could step in and maybe address this issue? Or what is the state's role in doing that?
I think the state's role is supporting the community when they ask us for support. And, so I think some of the conversations around, being a hub of organic farming, really looking at how to sell the natural beauty as a tourist attraction. And then, of course, using the assets the community already has around renewable energies and promoting that as well. All three of those, that three leg of the stool, I think really does provide a foundation for going forward. And so if my bill passes, there could be grant money available to support some of those ideas moving forward. And then also I'm working closely with a lot of communities that have found some hurdles that they have bumped into. And so trying to figure out how to have those conversations down at the Capitol to make sure we can remove barriers for Delta moving forward together as an entire county and a vibrant community going forward.
You were also sponsoring a bill this session that would add fluorescent pink to the hunter safety colors. Right now, the color that's approved is fluorescent orange. The bill is currently making its way through the House. Why are you authoring this bill, and what has been the feedback from the hunting community?
Yeah, the feedback to add fluorescent pink to the colors that can be worn while hunting has gotten overall good feedback, because I think it sends the message that women belong in hunting. Whether you choose to wear pink or not, it invites women into this sport that's, you know, a multi-billion dollar industry in the state and really important to some of our small rural communities, to their overall economics. But also, it's important to add to this conversation that fluorescent pink has been shown that it's just as safe to wear as orange. So we never want to discount safety when we're talking about hunting. So if it's just as safe, we can show that women should be part of hunting as much as men are. And if it can provide an economic boost to some small local businesses, perhaps because they start producing pink hunting gear, then that would be a great added part of the bill as well.
You've mentioned broadband will be a priority for you this session. What are you working on that could improve internet access in rural communities in Colorado?
Right now at the Capitol, I'm working on a very complex telecommunications bill that it's still in the drafting phases. But I'm very hopeful that this bill will finally get substantial dollars into building broadband infrastructure in the rural parts of the state, and also try to make sure that we are lowering the barriers for communities that want to provide their own broadband. So it's a bit of a 1-2 punch. But with that being said, it's a very complex bill that has a lot of stakeholders involved in it. So we're working through that process right now to gain all the input we can to make sure that when this bill hits its final form and is introduced, it's in a good spot to move broadband forward in rural Colorado and bridge the rural digital divide.
Before the session started, you talked about a bill that would give tax credits to families that support both children and elderly parents. What's the status of that measure?
That bill has just been introduced in the House, and this bill would give a tax credit of up to $3,600 to low and middle class income families that are supporting an elder in their household as well as a child dependent. So what has been labeled as the sandwich generation. We just have not seen the salaries of our middle class recover very well. So if the tax credit in the state can match the federal requirement and we can get a little bit more money into these bank accounts at the end of the year, that helps us level the playing field for these folks. And I think it should make a difference. That bill has to start in the House because tax credits in Colorado start in the House and then they'll come over to the Senate.
What will you be working on in the latter half of the session? It's just about approaching midpoint.
We have just about hit the half point of the session. I still have a lot of bills that I'm working with my colleagues on in the House that will come over. This is kind of when the bills start transferring from one chamber to another. And I really will be spending a significant amount of time on making sure that we are focused on bridging the rural digital divide, working on broadband for rural Colorado, and then still will pay close attention to trying to make sure that my rural emergency economic grant bill gets passed so that it can help out Delta County.
A big debate at the Capitol this session has been the hospital provider fee and changing that maybe into an enterprise fund and then moving it out from under the Tabor cap. What are your thoughts on this, and do you think it could actually happen?
The hospital provider fee was proposed as a compromise solution almost a year ago now, and it seemed like it had lots of potential to be a way for us to have a budget that better reflected the values of Colorado, putting money towards education, putting money toward transportation. These are things that we know the citizens of Colorado really want. Earlier this session, the Republican leadership in the Senate took a pretty hardline stance after getting pressure from Americans for Prosperity. They came out with a statement that the hospital provider fee was unconstitutional and that they didn't see it as a pathway forward. So I think with that strong of a statement from the Republican leadership in the Senate, I do not see it as a, being a possible solution for our budget, which means we have some really tough decisions to make in March, including a $20 million cut to higher education. I know there are folks that are still hopeful that we reach a compromise on this, but was frustrated that after a year of this being a possible solution at the beginning of the session, it was kind of removed from the table.
Thank you for your time, Carrie.
Thank you.
That was State Senator Carrie Donovan. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano.